I think if I were to really give that advice, my straightforward and easy answer would be get outside and get involved. I think that with an increasing digital age, we're really losing a connection and understanding of what it means to just be imaginative and be outside, and to truly connect to a place where you get to know an outdoor area like it's your own home.
The Life in Motion podcast is brought to you by Actual Outdoors. They help build beautiful brands that highlight the approachable and authentic parts of outdoor recreation. Said simply, they keep it real. Learn more at actualoutdoors.com.
This is a Life in Motion audio experience, a podcast about travel, action sports, culture, and more.
What's up, and welcome to episode 195 of Life in Motion. I've got Jennifer with me from the Alta Environmental Center, which guides efforts towards sustainability at the Alta ski area. I'm excited to hear her story and how they're protecting their natural environment. Jennifer, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, Jeremy, how's it going?
Good, good. I'm excited to connect and learn more about what you're doing, as mentioned. But before we jump into that, let's kind of start with who you are, you know, your background story, kind of what led you down this path in the first place.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it starts at a few different places. I think my interest in sustainability has been there since I was a kid. I was kind of known through my family to be on them about water saving and the way that we were recycling and, you know, just the small things that were presented to you through media. I think they kind of caught on well with me. And as I went through college, I worked for a sustainability magazine. It was environmentally focused. And I ran their advertising sector. It was kind of what I was studying, but I was also really interested in the sustainability world. And then I moved out to Utah after I graduated. I had some family that lived out here and decided, you know, I'm going to try and go and work at a ski resort for a season and see how it goes for me. So I worked at Snowbird for a year, or I actually worked there for a couple years. And I ran lifts, which was absolutely wonderful. You get this solitude and peace on a mountain that you share with so many different people, but you get these moments of solitude alone. And it really hooked me, I think, through having that, where I was like, I think I need to work in this industry somehow, some way. And so eventually I, you know, Snowbird is in the same canyon, in the Little Cottonwood Canyon, as Alta Ski Area. And there was a job opening at in the Alta Environmental Center. And I applied and was lucky enough to get it. And so I started working with them about 5 years ago, working for the original creator of the Alta Environmental Center. Her name was Mara Olivos, brilliant woman. Really, this was like the whole programming at Alta for sustainability was kind of her brainchild, along with some of other really passionate employees who worked here. She built out all the programming, just absolutely amazing. So I had an opportunity to work for her for a few years. And I worked for another woman named Beth Yetter, who was the director before me. And then, yeah, about a year and a half ago, the position opened up to be the program director. And I applied, and here we are. And it's been a passion project since. I mean, I got to learn and really get like the learning through osmosis, where you're in the field, doing the restoration practices, working with departments on their big projects, understanding how the ski area operates, which I think is a really important thing about this, about working in sustainability. You know, it's not all perfect pictures and just like this shiny, perfect operation. You really have to understand how is this business working and where are they spending their money and how are we going to make that viable for the future and for the environment. So it's a pretty complex field to work in, but it's very rewarding. I'll say that.
Yeah. Sounds like it's never a dull moment either in that sense. So going back a little bit to, you mentioned kind of growing up and kind of always kind of been conscious about sustainability and whatnot, but it sounds like mainly like that wasn't, it sounds like, as you mentioned, you were the one kind of raising awareness within your family. It wasn't necessarily your family raising that awareness into you, if that makes sense. Is that right?
Yeah, most definitely. And I was the youngest. And so you would imagine that, you know, the way that my family was would be how I was as well. And I ended up kind of going in a different direction. I think that it wasn't a focus, like let's say sustainability or environmental awareness wasn't really a focus. Now, mind you, we did spend a lot of time outside as a kid. We were big desert people. So we rode dirt bikes, we did off-roading, we camped a lot. We did a lot of trips in our motorhome across states. And so I had a, you know, really large appreciation for the beauty and wonder of what our world is. And I don't know exactly what it was that really was the bug that bit me, but something in me kind of turned, and I ended up being the one in the family that was like, hey, you need to watch how much water you're using when you shower, or this is recyclable and this is not. And I don't know what that really was. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but it definitely is interesting. And they always appreciated it about me and understood where I was coming from and let me be myself, which I thank them for still to this day, for just allowing me to be myself and pursue things that I was interested in. They just kind of let me run with it and supported me in it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And obviously, you know, there's still that connection with obviously being outside and all that stuff. So then once you were kind of introduced to the sustainability and protecting the environment and stuff, there's a very clear, obviously, marriage there between the outdoors and protecting it. So it's cool that, you know, you kind of took those two passions and ran with it. And then, so you mentioned, you know, you decided, you know, you're going to move and then, you know, do the ski area thing. Had you, when you started operating the lifts and as you mentioned, had you skied prior, or when you first moved out there, was that your first time kind of getting into that sport?
You know, I had snowboarded as a kid. We had taken, okay, you know, maybe a few times a year, I would say, we would go out for trips. I'm from Southern California originally, and so the skiing there is not outstanding the way that it is in Utah. And so we had small mountains and we would go for day trips and, you know, we would do some snowboarding, and board culture was really big in California. You know, you skated, you snowboarded, you surfed. Those were kind of the things. And so that's how I had picked it up. And I had older brothers and, you know, followed them around on what they were doing. And so when I started working at Snowbird, I was snowboarding. And I was not very good at it. I'll say that. I thought that I was. It's very funny to me now where I look back at it, because I think I thought I was good at it when I moved here. And then I started riding here and meeting people who grew up and actually grew up in Utah, skied Utah and did that. And I was like, oh no, these people ride snowboards. These people ski. I don't really know what I was doing, but you know, it's kind of, and especially working in this canyon, particularly Little Cottonwood's known for being steep and deep. Well, I mean, like steep, tall walls, deep storm cycles. And so I kind of got thrown into the fire pretty quickly. Had some frustrating days, that's for sure. And I think one of the funniest things is when I got my job at Alta, I didn't ski, which is a ski only resort, right? Or it's a ski area, truly. Alta doesn't own any lodging, so it's a ski area. But I really wanted this job. I was like, you know, this job's amazing. I could do this. I'm already snowboarding. And so I figured, hey, what the heck? I'll just say that I ski and that I can ski. You know, part of the interview process was, oh, do you know how to ski blue runs? You know, because I think some of my job is outside. I'm skiing around. We're working through these educational events. You have to be on your skis sometimes. And so I lied and said, yep, I sure do know how to ski. And I didn't even own skis at the time. So I was just like, this is just a shot in the dark. Like, I just really want this job. And then I got it. And so I was like, oh, goodness, now I need to actually go get skis. And so, I really truly learned to ski at 24, which I look at it as how grateful I must imagine other people are. And I don't know if they necessarily know how lucky they are to have grown up skiing. But learning a snow sport in your adult years is really difficult.
Yeah.
You're not made out of rubber anymore, you know. Injuries have consequences, much higher consequences than when you were younger. They cost money, right, as a kid. And so it was difficult, definitely. And I'm in my fifth year of skiing now, and I'm lucky enough to ski with people at work who are, you know, people I work with here and just skiers in general, or Alta skiers, who are really, really talented. I mean, they grew up skiing. They've been, you know, parents put them on skis since they were about 2 years old. So they've really got the hang of it. And I'm lucky enough to ski around and kind of, again, learn through osmosis, following people around. And, you know, I've taken a lesson here and there with my work benefits. But it was difficult. I'll say that. It was really difficult. And I still have days of frustration. But they're lessening, which is promising. And it's really rewarding, I'll say. It's really rewarding to not be good at something, put time and effort into it, and kind of accept the frustration of what it is, and then to slowly but surely get better at it and be rewarded with amazing, fun times on your skis. You're like, oh, this was all those days of frustration and falling down were really worth it. This is awesome.
Yeah. No, that is awesome. And I'll say my so my one and only experience on the snow came in college, I think like halfway through college, but it was snowboarding. And I remember a much shorter time frame as far as what you're saying, like the frustration and the rewarding part. My thing was I didn't know how to slow down without just falling down on my butt and on my wrist. But by the end of the day, I figured out how to kind of maintain my speed without doing that. And that was a very awesome spot. But unfortunately, where I lived then and where I live now, not very close to snow. So I haven't had the opportunity in a while, but, that's cool that, you know, that all that worked out, you know, obviously having the snowboard background and then kind of, you know, faking your way a little bit into the skiing for the job, but it obviously worked out well. So
yeah, most definitely.
That's really cool. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you know, it's tough when you don't live near snow. It's a really privileged place to be able to ski or snowboard often. I mean, it takes so many times, so many repetitions in that sport to get good at it or even just become proficient, right? Like it's a lot. So, it's a privileged place to be, I think, to have an opportunity to do so.
Absolutely. And then, so, you know, you mentioned, you know, you did that for a while and then the opportunity came up with the environmental, center. Where, like, before, like, I guess how much did you know about them prior to that opportunity coming up? And like, what, obviously there's the environmental aspect of it, you know, something that you kind of grew up like, caring about, but what was it about kind of specifically about the Alta Environmental Center that kind of attracted you to like, hey, this is the right program to kind of get involved with, or the right organization to get involved with?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. I actually didn't know a lot about the Alta Environmental Center prior. I was looking for a job in the field and kind of came across it. And I think that what really struck me is, one, it was a job that I was trying to get experience in the field, right? I was fresh out of college looking for something that was going to guide me in a direction I wanted to go. And this really seemed like a good opportunity for it. And once I got involved and understood the programming at Alta, that's where I really started to, I was like bit by the bug of it, right? Like I was like, this is an amazing program. And I think part of those pieces of that was we have an entire in-house native restoration process. So everything from collecting seed, cleaning that seed, packaging it, sending it off to a grower. The grower is nearby. It's down in Salt Lake Valley. He grows it over the course of the winter and spring. He returns it to me in, early summer. I take those plants that are, babies of ones that are already growing on mountains. So, you know, they're well acclimated to the environment. And we put them into places of disturbance around the mountain. And so we have a promise of 1,000 plants per acre of disturbance. So for every, if they disturb an acre and they, let's say it was an infrastructure change or a ski run grading issue where they needed to work something out that was maybe causing crashes or it was a blind spot or, wasn't really filling in with snow the way they wanted it to, they'll go in and they'll make those changes. Which comes at the cost of plant life, right? And native material. Yeah. And so we go back in and we'll put 1,000 plants in there every year for 3 years. So over the course, you know, you get 3,000 plants into an acre of disturbance. And I think those pieces and the attention to detail, and that's just one part of the programming, but that was one of the biggest parts that I started to see, wow, this is really cool and unique. And I know that I think Copper Mountain does a similar process, but I don't know of many others that do as robust of a program that Alta does native restoration. And so I thought that was really cool. I think most places, most ski areas are privately owned or they're owned by a larger conglomerate, let's say like Vail or Boyne Resorts, things like that. And they own that land. They're allowed to do whatever they want with it, right? However, Alta, while we privately own some of the land that we operate on, a lot of it, the majority of it really, is it's called a special use permit. So it's leased to us by the Forest Service. We operate within the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest, but we're allotted, 2,500 acres, let's say, of this Forest Service land to run our business. There is a different expectation here where we're working alongside these federal agencies or even local and state agencies to protect and steward the land, right? Like we have a much bigger responsibility and places to answer to say, hey, you did this work here. You let's say, messed up XYZ. We want to see that you restore it back to its original state. Like, okay, so that's what we're going to do. And so I think that's kind of the uniqueness of it, is there are other expectations of Alta. Whereas, you know, if you work at another place and it's privately owned and you decide to change the grade of a ski run, you don't, there's no necessary work that that has to be done. They're welcome to plant it however they want, right? They're going to throw down some veg matting, maybe some seeds, but that's about how it's going to go. So I think that was a lot of the pieces. I was like, this is a unique program. I'd like to be involved in. I want to learn more. How are they doing this?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's interesting, and sounds like a lot more, being a lot more intentional in those changes that you might make, you know, on the slopes and everything else that goes along with that, to making sure, you know, you're not disturbing the natural environment there in the sense, which seems like might sort of be a challenge, kind of given, you know, the activities that would take place on it and everything right. Like that, to kind of manage that.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of my job is, before a whole project goes into place, there's a ton of planning that goes in, right? And so my job is to sit and say, okay, this is the work you want to do. What mitigation can we do to make this the least impactful as possible, right? What work has already been done here? What plants are living here? What's sensitive here? Are we nearby water? Because we, you know, Alta actually sits at the headwaters of a watershed. So the headwater is Secret Lake. And then there's Little Cottonwood Creek that runs through the entire canyon. It feeds into the larger system of water that is being provided to Salt Lake City residents, right? So there's protection measures that need to be considered there. And there's a lot that goes into policy with that. And so there's just a lot. So my job is to present these things to the company and say, hey, these are the considerations you need to make. Sometimes it's permitting. So I'm saying, hey, if you want to do that work, you need to acquire XYZ permit. If you'd like to do that. And I help them make those decisions to say, how can we do this with our best foot forward and with as much forethought as possible, which is kind of hard. Sometimes there's things that are just not, you learn it over time is one other thing, but some things are hard to see in the future of or expensive to implement at that moment. Maybe it's a small project where you're like, hey, you know, there's some infrastructure that could be changed overall, but that's like a really large capital project, right? So, it's kind of, in some ways, you know, my job is to be like a critical eye to the company, but I'm still on board and on the same team as my company. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Kind of some, having that overlook, and I'm sure, you know, when they, you know, those ideas or plans come up, and then, you know, you kind of present your plan of, you know, okay, how are we gonna fix this, kind of mitigate any unnecessary damage or whatnot,
right?
That would assume that they're pretty open to that, obviously, for the whole reason, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of it is the reason they have me here, right?
not a lot of pushback.
Yeah, well, you know, that's give and take. I think that sometimes it's a business, right? And they're trying to get things done, and sometimes I'm over here, you know, it could be seen as, you know, the tree hugger that's like, don't cut down that tree, but then there's larger things that need to be done at the same time, right? Like, at the end of the day, it's a business that needs to run. It is serving the public. It's a recreational use space, a multi-use recreation, I should say, because it's summer and winter. So there's a lot of like pieces you need to kind of consider. And so there's some pushback at times, but there is the general overall, like, we do want to put our best foot forward and make the right decisions and do and follow what permitting and policies are in place that we need to you know, follow the rules, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, just like, you know, checking out the website and everything like that, I mean, there's some a lot of numbers on there, you know, as far as like the conservation part, you know, 43,000 trees, 110,000 plants, all that stuff. So when it comes to like when you're replanting and kind of protecting in that way, is it a lot of volunteer based? Obviously, since I think that was since 91, so that's a big number for that time. But is it mainly like, what do the boots on the ground look like as far as like when these restoration and conservation kind of projects kind of, you know, take life after being presented?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So in the summertime, we have a conservation crew of six or seven-ish, comprised of full-time and part-time workers. They're my summer crew, super hard workers, some of the most impressive people I've personally ever worked with. And they're our boots on the ground people. So they're majorly in charge of those restoration projects, all of those plants going in the ground, where our project sites are, understanding, you know, we're mitigating for some trail use, if that makes sense. And we can kind of go into maybe like more of like what we do overall during the summer. But to answer your question, yes, I have a conservation crew of six who can put in 400 plants a day into the ground. Or I do a major or a like a quite a diverse array of volunteer events where people can come and work with us. So we'll have, you know, volunteer event of 50 or of just 8, or, you know, we'll have them out on the mountain to do some trail work with us or to pull invasive species. So it kind of depends. Now you want to get people involved and have their hands in the dirt. Like it's, there really is a connection that you have when you put that plant in the ground and you come back to hike, you know, a few weeks later and you still see that plant living, or you come back the next year and you see the tree you put in the ground and it's still living, right? There's a big connection that you make with the place at that time. And it creates a caring for the environment that's going to carry over year after year and be passed on to other people, which is truly one of the best connections we can make with our community. And a lot of my goal for the summertime is to get people up here, get them to know and understand the place and to share it with them. I think that's one of your best ways to like garner support when you want to implement changes or implement anything to protect the place that you love. It's kind of having that type of love and care and connection with a place to know that the community backs you, right? And so that, I know that kind of slightly answers your question. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. And I think you brought up a good point there, is, you know, having people involved, helping plant the trees and plants and whatever other kind of work, but it's creating a different connection with the outdoor place that they love, whether that's in the summertime or the wintertime or whenever they visit it throughout the year, to have that greater kind of appreciation. It sounds like, to, hey, I did that. I kind of played my part in that sense, and now here I am enjoying it type.
Yes, exactly.
That's awesome. So I know we kind of, you know, touched about a couple different, you know, things, a little bit of the you know, winter and summer and those different uses. So, but you kind of mentioned kind of how things kind of change kind of seasonally or whatnot. What kind of are those kind of specific things as far as some of those focuses or things that you had just mentioned?
Yeah, like between summer and winter, you mean, like how our operation kind of changes?
Yeah,
most definitely. So in the summertime, we're really, really interested in land conservation. We're working with, where are we putting our plants back in the ground? Where are we doing our, what trees we're putting in the ground and where? And a lot of that has strategy, right? Like we're not just kind of putting trees wherever. You can't put new trees into groomed runs. We're also like rescuing trees out of groomed runs that are, they're not going to have a chance to live there. So we'll actually dig them out really carefully and pot them for a bit, and then we'll replant them somewhere else later on the mountain. And then getting people up there and get connected with it. So we want to do in community engagement and education. We work with a lot of nonprofit partners from the Salt Lake Valley who do education, and we facilitate them at Alta so that they can have a place, and really a beautiful place, to put on their programming and to do their job, right? And present what they have to say. And we actually really enjoy those. We do a lot of educational events up here. And so that's kind of our summertime routine. I could go on forever on what we do in summer. That's truly our busy season. But in the wintertime, we kind of switch over, and my team gets smaller. It's just myself and one other colleague that are year round, and we work in the wintertime. And that's when things kind of change. Like my job starts to become really logistical, I would say, and planning. So I'm understanding what we're doing for the next summer, ordering plants, ordering trees, kind of reviewing what we did, what worked in the last one, right? And then I'm going to now start working with the ski area on sustainability. And that's much different on the corporate sustainability level than it is on just working with native restoration. So understanding what does your operation look like in total. We do a carbon inventory count for Alta. So understanding, basically gathering all of this data about Alta, how are we using our water, our electricity, our natural gas, what we're recycling, all things like that. And we put it into this big tool, basically, that allows us to see what our carbon footprint looks like.
Yeah.
And so that's a large part of my winter, is kind of understanding that right there, and to be able to identify opportunities and places where either saving money or losing money, let's say, and where we might be able to increase some efficiencies. And then as well, I'm working with department by department, like, hey, you know, what do you have going on this year? What's some of your big capital projects you'd like to do? Are you interested? You know, and some of those things are what would seem, you know, kind of benign, like, oh, I want to get a brand new dishwasher, which a brand new, like, commercial dishwasher looks like $50,000, you know? So you're like, okay, well, what's some of our efficient dishwashers look like? What does that look like for implementation? Can we do it in-house? Are there any other infrastructure changes we can make to try to make this a greener, more sustainable process for you? So I kind of sit down with everybody to understand what they're working through and if I can help them at all. Just offer resources, right? Not tell them what to do, but just to offer them the resources to say, hey, these are your options if you would like to do that kind of work. We also work within the waste stream. The super fun part, working with trash. And we're just trying to understand, okay, where's our trash going? What do people need? What can we recycle? And we have a pretty unique process here with one, we do a food waste program. So we actually collect food waste from our food and beverage locations, from not only back of house, but front of house as well. So we're getting our skiers involved in this process as well and showing them what we're doing and how it's working. And basically we're collecting food scraps. And then we send it off to this place called Wasatch Resource Recovery, where they're turning food waste into natural gas and really nutrient-rich fertilizer. It's super cool. It's called a digester. And it's basically a big man-made stomach where they're putting food waste into it, coming from all corners of Salt Lake. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I won't go into it too far, but basically this digester takes all this food and it starts to break it down through a heating process. And then it releases methane, which is actually a really potent and powerful greenhouse gas. And they're able to capture it before it's being released. And then they purify it into something called biomethane. And that's actually used as natural gas to heat homes. So we're doing this process at Alta where we're trying to collect as much as we can. And over the process of, or over the course of about 3 or 4 years, we've collected about 50 tons worth of food waste, which is pretty amazing. And so, yeah, so we're sending it off there. They're selling it back into the grid as renewable energy. And then they're also selling the byproduct, which is this really nutrient-rich fertilizer, off to big local farmers in Utah to use on their crops.
That's cool.
So it's pretty cool. It's a pretty sweet process. And then we do one other small, I don't really know how to describe it. We do glass recycling, mixed recycling, but we kind of have this like informal in-house recycling process where we recycle everything from rubber, electronics, batteries, light bulbs, tires, things like that. And we collect it all from these different departments. We keep it on site until we have enough to make a trip down Valley. And then we go and recycle those things there. So it's a small, like I call it casual kind of, it's just something that we do in house. And I'm in contact with the other departments say, hey, you know, if you have, you know, 200 pounds of tire recycling, please let me know. We'll come and collect it from you. Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it's cool too, because, you know, obviously there's the whole outside aspect of what you're doing and protecting the environment that way. But also, you know, the larger footprint of the actual buildings and that stuff for the ski area and that kind of stuff, all the energy, the waste, everything like that, like dishwashers, you know, looking at those specific other layers, like, hey, how else can we do it outside of just, you know, making sure this one area of doesn't get kind of destroyed when we do thing or invasive species, right, or whatever like that. It kind of goes much deeper than that. And it sounds like in a weird way it almost works out well as a sense of, you know, you have the summer and winter seasons where obviously, you know, getting outside might be a little bit harder for those specific things, planning and whatnot, in the winter, so you can kind of dive into that other stuff that you just mentioned. So that sounds like a kind of a really unique kind of aspect of what y'all are doing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're right. Like, it is harder to get outside and it's harder to show people look at the beauty of Albion Basin, which is like one. It, I mean, at Alta, we have this area called the Albion Basin. It's this big, beautiful, it's an old, where a huge glacier used to sit. So it's this deep basin that sits, and it's like, looks like the Sound of Music in the summer. It's so beautiful, but it, you can't show people that in the winter when we are having the majority of our users up here in the winter. Right.
Yeah.
And so I can't say, hey, look at the beauty of this place and what we want to take care of when it, you can't even see the ground during the winter. So we really try to engage people in our community through education during wintertime, which, you know, in the winter, skiing is such a huge piece of the economy here in Utah. I mean, it's massive. That's what the, it's a huge piece of Utah economy to have this many. I want to think of the number of how much money they make on tourism every year. It's kind of amazing. I can't think of it off the top of my head right now. So what we do is we have about four or five different educational events on the snow. So that looks like, you know, birding on skis. So we have Tracy Aviary. It's a bird conservatory down in the valley, and they have conservation ecologists who come up and we lead a birding tour on skis. Which is super fun. And so then we do another one. It's called Trees and Skis, right? We've got people, certified arborists who are coming out and leading people around, showing them, hey, these are the trees that are living at Alta. This is the history and the story behind it and how long these trees have been here and what we're doing with them, right? And then to kind of engage on with people who maybe don't ski or don't have that equipment, we do a couple of snowshoe tours. So you can come up. There's a big, long road. You can walk up with absolutely breathtaking views of the valley, and you're working with a naturalist who's saying, hey, this is the ecology, here's the geology, you know, human history in the canyon, things like that. They'll kind of run you through that, and that's just our way of saying, hey, look at all these things that you can do here. Like, this is a place for you to come and recreate and love and share with your family, and I think that's really special, and it's a way that we can kind of continue that piece of getting people here and having them understand the environment which they're interacting with.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like some really unique way to not only experience skiing, but you, like you said, the environment as well, whether that's, you know, trees or birds or everything else in between. Just, yeah, like you said, that they form that different relationship and kind of expose them. And also assuming, you know, most of those people that are coming there, you know, are I guess would be considered tourists or whatnot, but you know, they're hopefully, you know, taking that experience back home from wherever they're visiting and kind of being more conscious about their own environment and those things, and maybe sparking up some curiosity as well.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. You nailed it on the head.
That's awesome. And then you also mentioned, kind of jumping back to the summer season, that, you know, a lot of, other partnerships with other nonprofits to kind of help facilitate their events. What are some examples of some of those kind of summer kind of nonprofit kind of educational type events that you all kind of help in that sense?
Yes, definitely. We work with Tracy Aviary. I mentioned they're a bird conservatory down in Salt Lake. And so they do summer birding as well. So once a month, they'll go on about a 3-hour I call it a walkabout. It's not a super hard hike, but it's a walkabout where they go birding with an expert birder for 3 hours. And then we also work with Hawkwatch International, and they take care of birds of prey who have been injured or otherwise can't survive in the wild anymore. And they rehabilitate them on site. And then they actually use them as a resource once they're with Hawkwatch for a period of time and they're no longer deemed like able to survive in the wild. Hawkwatch uses them as educational resources. So they become really adapted and habituated to people. And so they bring them out, they transport them in their car, they bring them up, they've got these cool stands for them, and they're able to use them as an educational piece. And it's awesome because, I mean, I see these birds like year after year. I feel like I know them personally at this point, right? but it's falcons, it's owls, it's eagles, hawks. It's absolutely amazing to see. And so they bring them up here and they do it up close and personal where, you know, you can come out, you can sit for 45 minutes, get to know the birds, understand how they live there, what their, you know, habits are, whatnot. And it's really geared towards, I would say, kids, like a family-oriented event. I'm going to get people of all ages for that. And we tend to go on a little hike together afterwards. A lot of times the Environmental Center or Hawkwatch will go out and lead a short hike around, and we'll talk about some of the places that these birds might live and how they're interacting with Alta, what times of the year they're around, things like that.
Yeah.
And then as far as like working with other nonprofits, I would kind of consider them educational events just because we're teaching so much on during the event, but they're more volunteer events. So we work with groups like Cottonwood Canyons Foundation. They're a nonprofit who's geared towards stewardship and education in the Tri-Canyon area. So for Tri-Canyon and Utah, it's going to be Little Cottonwood Canyon, Big Cottonwood Canyon, and Mill Creek, which are three canyons that have massive recreational use in the valley. And so they come up here and we do a few different things. We'll do invasive species removal. You know, we'll have a few hours together to go out and identify weeds and say, you know, how we get them out, how we properly take care of them, properly dispose of them, things like that. And we survey, I think, about 100 acres together at Alta to understand, like, what's growing there and why. And we do all hand pulling, so there's no use of herbicides whatsoever. And that's really in respect to the fact that we're sitting in a watershed. We don't want to be, like, that stuff washing down throughout the creek. And getting into people's water supply. And then Tree Utah is another one. They plant, you know, tens of thousands of trees throughout Salt Lake and Southern Utah every single year. It's really, really cool program. And so we work with them and they come up on our tree planting and tree harvesting days. So we're going out, it's a pretty burly day. You know, you're going out, you're hiking, where we're putting trees into the ground, you're carrying tools, you're carrying buckets, water, all kinds of things. And so we get to work alongside these people and really get to know them. And I think the really special part is, one, you're learning from experts, right? Like experts in their field. And at the same time, those volunteers who are coming up to work in those projects, you know, those are the people who care about the same places you care about, right? So if you really, really like, you know, a particular trail in Little Cottonwood Canyon and a big rainstorm comes through and it washes that out completely, Cottonwood Canyons Foundation is the group that comes up and rehabs that trail. They put it all back together. They put the erosion to bed, right? Like they're like fixing it all up. So you come back out and you're having a pleasant time on that trail and not slipping and sliding through rocks, cracks, different things. Right. And so it's really, I think, special for people to come up and understand this is the face to the name of who's working and caring for the same places that we all love. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that connection is really important. So for me, I like to think of them as educational events because they're getting to learn from these people. But, you know, it's also just like community connection. We live in a really digitally based age where it feels like you're talking to people often, but it's too, you know, weird to text it, to write it out. You've had time to think about it, where it's much more organic and real to be face to face with people and have conversation and have dialogue about things and understand where people are coming from. I think some of the issues and some of the arguments and problems that we see a lot digitally would be so much different if we had them in person.
Yeah. You know?
And so having those opposing opinions, and I don't really even think they're truly opposing, but to understand the dialogue between two different people, I find to be really interesting, and it keeps me connected and grounded through my community that way. And I would assume so for many other people who get the opportunity to come out and work with us.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And going to the digital thing, you know, you might read and some kind of message that was not and blow it out of proportion when it's not how it was sent in the first place. But you avoid that, obviously, you know, in person. But be able to, you know, once again, it sounds like everything's kind of really focused on that community aspect that then obviously plays into the protection and environmental and everything like that, which is really cool that the way that you all are building that and working to continue that. And I know we've covered a lot of different things that you do. Is there anything that I might have overlooked?
Oh, there's so many. I think that's, you know, a good overview of what we do on a really like high level, overlooking kind of like what are the big things. But in between, you know, like we're working with Forest Service on, you know, surveying for bark beetle, understanding what fire hazard might be in the canyon, what work needs to be done there, and understanding what mitigation and work we can do here in-house, and also work alongside these agencies that are experts in that field and kind of working hand in hand to get those common goals completed. You know, and we do some others. We, you know, we're doing some writing. We do a sustainability report every year. We're writing our newsletters. But I think for the most part, we've kind of nailed a lot of it with what our main focus is. I think if you put it into three big categories, you know, it's community, it's land conservation, it's business, right? Like none of this is going to happen without Alta being economically viable, right? Like we need Alta to be successful and to work and so we can keep doing this work. You know, obviously if there were no humans in this canyon, we wouldn't need to be doing it and this place would be operating on its own, I would say. But that's not the case. And there are millions of people who want to recreate here and use the canyon and that it should be recognized and understood I'm just grateful that there are businesses that care enough to put money towards these kinds of things. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's all money.
Yeah, absolutely. But for them to understand and buy into the mission and the work and everything else that you're doing and like I said, most importantly to understand that, you know, is huge to, you know, for, you know, that helps everybody, helps the land, helps us, helps everybody in between. So that's really cool to hear that. So one question I always like to ask our guests is kind of one piece of advice that the listeners can take away. And I think your story is kind of interesting. Obviously, you know, starting off young and kind of, you know, almost kind of getting your family into that sustainability kind of mindset. And then obviously to where you're at today, which is a much larger scope from the land to the buildings and everything else. But for someone, kind of, you know, what would your advice be for someone who maybe has kind of a kid or whatnot, and they're trying to spark kind of that same passion that you came across when you're young? Where's like a good place to start? Because I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, there's so many different layers of how you can think of things. But how, I guess, what would your advice be for the parents of the younger generations to kind of, you know, start shifting their mindset and thinking about their impact and the sustainable things that they can do and everything like that, where it's not necessarily overwhelming in the beginning, if that makes sense?
Yeah, totally. I think if I were to really give that advice, my straightforward and easy answer would be get outside and get involved. I think that with an increasing digital age, we're really losing a connection and understanding of what it means to just be imaginative and be outside and to truly connect to a place where you get to know an outdoor area like it's your own home. And that's how I feel about Alta, right? Like I get to recreate here, I work here, but I know these nooks and crannies of this mountain where it's like, these are pieces of home to me and they're really, really special. They're, you know, there's just these small things. And I think those pieces of like staying connected keeps the inner kid in me going and caring about a place. And I think that some of that inspiration comes from wanting to protect it. And so I don't think it's necessarily, you know, immediately we'll go out and get involved and start planting trees. While I do recommend that, I think it's going outside and playing, you know, go outside and play and spend time with people and get connected with your community. And I think those kinds of things really will, you know, you can't tell your kids what to do. And I think it's going to spark their inspiration and imagination on what do they truly care about? Because it could be anything from planting trees to, you know, maybe they in time are going to research salamanders or be really interested in a particular bird, or maybe they're really interested in a energy efficiency plant, right? Like there's all of these different things that slowly but surely they're going to come to on their own account. But I think that getting outside and playing is going to be the piece that's truly going to spark it for them, you know? And then I also kind of mentioned like get connected, like go outside and get connected. I would recommend if there is at all an interest in environmental work is to just start volunteering. I think that's one of the best things you can do if they're, you know, teenage years, college years, is to just go out and start volunteering because you start getting connected. Maybe it's not the group you're volunteering for in that moment, but it's the people you meet through it that your opportunities are going to open up. And I think the more times you do it and the more times you open yourself up to opportunity, the better your chances are going to be of coming across something really cool.
Yeah, no, I love that both perspectives there, you know, from getting outside, getting the kids outside and connected that way. And then, you know, as you get older, get involved with those groups and different experiences. So I think that's excellent advice. And so where can people find you online and learn more? I know you mentioned reports and that kind of stuff and get involved.
Yeah, definitely. Alta.com/environment. We have extensively worked on this website with our marketing crew to put all of our programming on here and to inform you of everything we're up to. We post all of our winter events, which are posted for now. You can look through all of our summer events. We don't quite have our dates set quite yet, but we will in the coming weeks. And so we'll put them on there. And yeah, you can get connected there. We'll send out some newsletters you can get connected through. And then, of course, as always, we do have an Instagram and a Facebook where we post all the time about what events are open for registration, what we're doing, what we're up to. We have a big Alta Earth Day coming up. I would love to throw that out there on April 13th here at Alta. It'll be an all-day event. We'll have all kinds of community members and organizations here at Alta out on the snow where you can come and get connected, understand their programming, what they're up to. You know, if you'd like to get involved with their organizations, those are opportunities as well. And then we'll have all of our educational events running throughout the day where you can come and get signed up and go out on one of them if you'd like, snowshoeing, skiing, all kinds of things. So if anyone's in the Salt Lake area and on April 13th, please come and meet us. We'd love to get to know you.
Awesome. It sounds like a lot of good stuff coming up in the future as far as events go and more, of course, to learn on there. So definitely make sure you check them out. But Jennifer, I appreciate you coming on and kind of sharing your story and most your passion of the work you're doing. So I definitely appreciate that. And I wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It was a pleasure to be on your show today.
Thanks for listening. And hey, if you've made it this far and like what you've heard, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and let your friends know about Life in Motion. Until next time.